This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's 12:03, Wednesday afternoon, August 3rd. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The WBBM Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Americans are racking up credit card debt as they struggle with the impact of inflation. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now we're hearing from the president of the St. Louis Fed. Well, there's fresh data on factory orders and the service sector. We're joined by Bob Bruska, chief economist, Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Bob, thanks for joining us today. James Bullard, who is the president of the St. Louis Fed, is one of the more notorious hawks when it comes to interest rates. And he says there will be more interest rate hikes to come, but he does not believe that there is a recession and that there's going to be a recession. What type of message does that send?
I don't know. Happy days are here again. Now, I heard, I was at a meeting last night. I belong to this group called the Money Marketeers of New York University, and we heard Jim live and in person last night. I got to ask him a question about this, and no, he's pretty convinced that the Fed can help avoid a recession, that there will be a soft landing, and he thinks that the way to do this is to raise rates relatively rapidly. And to him, the key for this whole process is to raise rates and to get control of things and for the Fed to demonstrate credibility. And he says if the markets think that the Fed has credibility, it's more likely that we have a soft landing. He said it's not the sharp increase in the Fed funds rate isn't the thing that will create a recession. In fact, he thinks the opposite, that if the Fed goes too slow and doesn't burnish its credibility, the markets will worry more and that will be more of a problem and enhance the prospects of having recession. That's it in a nutshell.
So basically, it's just, it's really a sentiment issue as far as a recession is concerned. If one were to develop, if the business community and the markets don't believe the Fed's on top of things and they're not responding to conditions as they are, they will take matters into their own hands. But if the Fed appears to be in the driver's seat, they will have more confidence in the Fed's ability to control inflation.
Yes, that and a little bit of pixie dust. I think it's a question of how much you want to believe that. I think the problem right now is that the Fed is so far behind the curve that they waited 11 months when inflation soared to do anything, that they extended their tapering exercise and sat on the sidelines. And so while they have given us a couple of very strong rate hikes, we already have some stirring in former Fed people like Alan Blinder telling the Fed, oh, don't go too fast. And you know, even last week, Jerome Powell looked at these data and said that at 2.5%, the Fed funds rate is at neutral. Well, you know, what kind of message does that send? That doesn't seem like neutral to me. How's the Fed funds rate at neutral at 2.5% with the CPI at 9.1%? So I think the Fed's got a big messaging problem on its hands. So anyway, Jim has a point of view, and I think it's interesting, but I don't think the Fed is quite where he thinks they are in terms of credibility.
Very quickly, I want to ask you about the services sector. It picked up in July, and also price growth slowed in a big way. Is this another sign that maybe inflation has peaked? It is now on the way down.
Yeah, it may be. You know, we had a similar signal from the manufacturing ISM report. So the services report showed some rebound. The early report out of the Chicago area was actually quite weak. So this is interesting. But there's still a lot of weakness and slowdown in this report. The headline is good. The inflation news is good. The job component is still on the weaker side. So, you know, don't unstrap your seatbelt yet.
Bob Bruska, chief economist with Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Coming up, consumer debt in the U.S. hitting new highs.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Household debt in the U.S. surpassed $16 trillion for the first time in history during the second quarter of the year. Let's examine this troubling trend with Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst, Bankrate.com, based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Greg, thanks for joining us today. When it comes to household debt, what are the categories that are accelerating the fastest?
Well, Rob, what's most troubling here is what we're seeing with credit cards and auto loans. You know, the mortgage increase in mortgage debt, not only has that been tempered somewhat by the rise in rates, we get home prices to moderate. You know, that'll take some of the steam out of that. But homeowners are sitting on a record amount of equity. So that one doesn't worry me. What we are seeing, car payments are higher than ever. Those higher sticker prices mean drivers are borrowing more. And we're also seeing delinquencies start to tick up on auto loans and credit card debt. Boy, that was down on the way down throughout the pandemic as people had excess cash. They paid down the balances. But in large part, because of inflation and how that's stretching household budgets, we see those balances on the rise and doing so at a time when interest rates are rising very rapidly.
How are the increased rates of credit card debt lining up with the higher amount of personal savings that households have racked up during the pandemic when the government was sending out checks to people and also when people were curtailing their plans to travel and dine out? Does the American consumer still have that cash cushion, or has that been drawn down?
Well, it's, the term is a K-shaped recovery in the sense that, like the letter K, there's one escalator going up, another one going down. And so a lot of the households that are still flush with savings tend to be those that have more resources, have higher net worth, and don't have that paycheck-to-paycheck situation that's been straining so many others. The households that are living paycheck-to-paycheck, increasingly, they've been running down that savings cushion, and they've been leaning on things like credit card debt in order to make ends meet.
Now, there are indications that the rate of inflation is slowing down, but prices are going to be higher than they were a couple of years ago. Is there a point at which there could be some sense of balance or equilibrium from the people who are racking up debt to stay ahead of rising prices?
Well, I mean, I think we have to look at not only the rate of inflation, but also income growth. We've seen the best income growth in decades, but nobody notices because inflation's at a four-decade high. So getting inflation down in a significant and sustained way is the first step. But we've got to see income growth remain at a decent level so that households have actual growth in their buying power and not seeing it significantly eroded as it is this year.
Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst with Bankrate.com, based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Coming up next, shares of Airbnb sag despite record-breaking bookings.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Airbnb is reporting a big jump in revenue, but the market isn't impressed. Let's check in with Angelo Zeno, Senior Industry Analyst with CFRA Research, based in New York. Angelo, thanks for joining us today. Let's run down the numbers. Revenue jumping 58% year over year, the most profitable second quarter for Airbnb to date, reporting a net income of $379 million, up from a loss of $68 million a year ago, a $2 billion stock buyback program. What doesn't Wall Street like about Airbnb?
Yeah, I mean, you just ran through the numbers and they all seem great, right? I think it really has come. It really comes down to one: the fact that the stock has had a really, really nice run, kind of into the numbers. So likely, any type of good news or kind of in line type of expectation was already built into the stock. This was one of those quarters where they not only needed to beat, but probably decidedly beat, especially in a market maybe that's starting to worry a little bit more about kind of peak travel conditions, right? So Airbnb would kind of fall under that universe over there. And I'd say the other issue out there is it is absolutely an expensive stock relative to many others in the universe out here. So it's probably kind of limited in terms of at least the results that were provided here. But that being said, I think the the opportunities ahead remain absolutely enormous for long-term investors out there.
As far as Airbnb is concerned, where are the areas of opportunity just as far as taking advantage of the travel boom? And also, what are Airbnb's expenses? Because it's not like a traditional hotel where you have to pay a front desk person and a housekeeping staff and a restaurant staff. It's up to the Airbnb owners to actually do all of the work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, as far as, you know, where the opportunities are, I'd say this, you know, during the pandemic, clearly this was a business that was driven more about kind of local stays, you know, locations you can kind of drive to, as well as more kind of non-urban areas. And the opportunity that we've seen here over the last couple of months and where we expect Airbnb to kind of really gain traction over the next, you know, 9 to 12 months will be more in the cross-border travel, as well as kind of increasing stays in urban areas, which now represent, you know, about 47% of their gross nights booked. So those are going to be the opportunities ahead. Increased supply will definitely help kind of them in those areas, which we expect to come to fruition over the next couple of months. Now, in terms of the kind of the cost structure and everything, the great thing about Airbnb is it is kind of just a platform-based company. So they really don't have much in terms of cost. The operating expenses aren't going much up much, which allows them to really kind of scale that business model. If you actually look at CapEx, less than 2% of their total revenue. So a very asset-light business model where they can really see some significant benefits here from that scalability over the next couple of years.
Your recommendation for Airbnb stock?
So we do have a buy recommendation. Our 12-month target price is $125.
Angelo Zeno, Senior Industry Analyst with CFRA Research based in New York. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, spending your retirement on a cruise ship.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Chicago's News Traffic and Weather Station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The suspect in the Highland Park parade shooting enters a plea in Lake County Court. Gas prices are down. We'll check in with an oil industry analyst on what lies ahead. In Travel Tuesday, downsizing in retirement by spending a significant amount of time cruising. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 452 points. The NASDAQ is up 315. The S&P 500 is up 67. AccuWeather says breezy, hot, and humid with clouds and sunshine. A high today of 93. The AccuWeather real field temperatures near 100. Could see some strong thunderstorms this afternoon. 89 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies, but it feels like 98 at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, Robert Cremo III has pleaded not guilty to more than 100 criminal charges filed against him for allegedly firing from a rooftop during the 4th of July parade in Highland Park, killing 7 people and wounding 48 others. Lake County State's Attorney Eric Reinhart spoke outside the courtroom in Waukegan this morning.
Generally speaking, under Illinois law, the defense may demand a trial either in writing or orally. The defense did not do that today. That was what happened in the public courtroom. I'm not going to comment beyond that.
During an initial court hearing 2 days after the shooting, prosecutors said Cremo had confessed to the crime. He's facing a sentence of life in prison. OPEC and its fellow oil-producing allies have decided to boost production, but not by much.
We have labored mightily and produced a mouse. Could be the quote making the rounds in Washington today. President Biden traveled to Saudi Arabia last month, hoping to get the oil giant to ramp production up enough to drive global oil prices down far enough to placate American voters. Well, OPEC did decide to increase production at its monthly meeting, but by far less than in previous months, oil prices edging up slightly on the news. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
And oil now trading at $91 a barrel. That's its lowest number since February. We'll take a deeper dive into oil prices later this half hour on the Noon Business Hour, which is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets in plus territory. We're joined by Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist with B. Riley Financial, based in New York. Art, thanks for joining us today. The Dow up 445 points, the NASDAQ up 314, the S&P 500 up 66. Did investors just get up on the right side of the bed this morning?
Yeah, a couple things going on here, Rob. I think one, and it clearly the earnings that we saw both last night after the bell and this morning continue a list of earnings that are better than feared. And when that happens, I think that's enough good news for investors. I think the other thing is that the yields on the 10-year and the rest of the Treasury curve has sort of come back into the range that we're used to over the course of the last couple of months, which is between 2.75% and 3%. That seems to be the appropriate place. And we dipped down to 2.5% a couple of days ago. And that's sort of an overshoot to the downside. We saw an overshoot to the upside when we got to 3.5%. But I think the 2.75%, 3.25% range on the 10-year helps investors feel a little bit more confident. So both those things happening at the same time certainly have resumed the uptrend that markets saw certainly in the month of July.
And there were a couple of encouraging reports, not only on economic growth, but also on the pace of inflation. The ISM Services Index out today, a lot of spending in the services sector, stronger than expected. And at the same time, the prices that they are paying lower, which suggests that inflation is cooling off.
Yeah, really important point. Both the ISM manufacturing, which had a prices paid component that was much lower than anticipated and down significantly on a month-over-month basis, mirrored what the ISM Services came out with today. And if you look back over the last 3 months, all of the Fed regional banks, which have a prices paid component, have been down for three consecutive months. So inflation certainly is rolling over on its own accord, and certainly with the help of the Fed and tighter monetary policy. So inflation heading in the right direction may well be pointing to the fact that we've got peak in yields, peak in inflation, and certainly, you know, getting past that peak in pessimism about markets, which was very prevalent in the month of June.
And one other sign that maybe we've turned a corner as far as economic anxiety is concerned is that the meme stocks are back, and there's a new one. And this one, it's very interesting, the fact that I want to know why this one got picked. It's AMTD Digital. It's a Hong Kong financial services website or company. It's the darling of the Reddit's Wall Street Bets subreddit, which launched GameStop and AMC last year. The price up over 21,000%. How did this become a meme stock? I mean, I understand why GameStop became a meme stock last year and AMC as well, but this one seems kind of obscure.
Yeah, very obscure. Unless and until it actually started blowing up here, none of us had heard of it for sure. It was an IPO that came out July 15th clearly has a tiny float. So, you know, and by that, I mean, there's just not that many shares at all. Now, it's too recent of an IPO to really have any short interest. So that was some of the drivers of the early sort of meme stock phase, right? You know, go after overly shorted stocks. That's not the case here. But the tiny float is what's really pushing things around. So if there's just not that many shares outstanding and you get enough of a crowd or an army of Reddit pirates to attack and find a name to attack, you're going to get this kind of action. And as we know, having gone through this over the last couple of years, these things don't tend to end very well, especially when you think about the fact that the last time these guys reported on how they were doing, they had about $25 million in revenue. So, you know, with its current run-up in valuation over the course of the last 2 or 3 days, you're talking about a market cap of, call it, $235 billion for $25 million in revenue. So, you know, clearly this is a little out of whack.
And very quickly, the fact that people are willing to play these games once again, is it a sign that the economic turbulence may be behind us?
No, I don't think that's a sign of anything that other than the fact that the Reddit army has found a new enemy, and they seem to be going after it with a vengeance. But the magnitude of money that it takes to push around a stock like this, AMT Digital, is much less than some of the larger stocks that they went after a couple of years ago when this whole thing began. I think the speculative edges of the market really don't tell us much about how the general market sentiment is. And I would tell you, I'd be much more in tune with the fact that the S&P 500 is up about 10% from its lows and working its way through some significant resistance. I think that's a better barometer for how the market's doing and how investors feel about the economy.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist with B. Riley Financial, based in New York. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
As you consider plans for retirement, why restrict yourself to land? How about the water and add cruise ships to the mix? We welcome in Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale, Arizona. The website travelbta.com. Angie, thanks for joining us today. So here's a story from a couple of months ago. We were on a Disney cruise as a family. It was a week-long voyage. We get back to Port Canaveral, Florida. Everyone gets off the boat. And then we found a couple of families that were ready to get back on as soon as their rooms and the ship was cleaned and provisioned for the next voyage. The departure was later that afternoon. Is this a common thing where people just decide to live on the cruise ship for a couple of months, maybe many months out of a year?
Right. It is a true concept. I wouldn't say that it's common, but it's definitely in high demand in terms of the availability to cruise for these extended periods of time. I mean, it even has a theme, the around the world cruise. So these are itineraries where the cruises range from 100 days of cruising on up to 275 days, perhaps. And so these are longer voyages. And just to give you kind of some insight as far as the demand, itineraries sell out instantly. So we're looking at 2025 itineraries already if you're looking to do this extended type of cruising.
Now, I'm looking at the website right now for the Cunard line, you know, the grand old dame of transatlantic cruising. It's been around for 150 years. It's definitely on the higher end of the cruise spectrum, but you have a 27-night Grand Caribbean cruise. It leaves December 15th. It ends on January 11th of next year. You'd sail across the Atlantic during the winter. That's kind of a rough go, but then you spend the rest of the time just going around the Caribbean. That's $4,300 per person. That's the basic one. And then you can, you know, get more luxurious accommodations from there. And that's, you know, $4,300 for a month of accommodations anywhere. You do the math on that. That's not entirely unreasonable.
Right. So you're looking at like a month-long cruise, and then certainly you can extend. And you're right. And you really have to evaluate what's included. When cruise lines advertise these more unique types of itineraries where there is that extension, they have to really kind of rethink what are the amenities that someone is really going to value for a longer period of time. So some of these cruise lines will include the air, they'll include the excursions, and they'll also offer the butler service with unlimited laundry, dry cleaning, pressing. And you find that in those retirement years where you're weighing, do we want to downsize? Do we want to do something different? And, you know, I have a background as a CPA, so a lot of times with my clients, I really try to assess, like, look, you might have 10 years of traveling, but you're probably going to probably do more traveling those first three or four and then slowly, you know, travel quite a bit less. So you might see bigger budgets in those earlier years of retirement related to travel. And you kind of, when you break it down in that fashion, people get a little bit more comfortable with spending more money because it's for a particular number of years. So we also have some travelers, interesting enough, before the pandemic, I was working with a retiree and she was looking at spending 3 months, you know, renting a villa, doing a little bit of coastal trips where she would stay 3 nights and 4 nights, and it was going to be on the front end an extended cruise and on the back end a cruise. So it really is a realistic concept. And I think when you're downsizing your home and you're looking for that opportunity of, okay, instead of committing to a condo or moving into more of a adult living center, maybe for 2-3 years, we do more travel, we visit families, and we do, you know, month to month type rentals in between.
Yeah, and everything is right there for you. As you said, somebody does your laundry. You don't have to walk very far to get breakfast, lunch, or dinner. And it's all self-contained, and a lot of people do things for you. And once you get to a certain age and you've put in a lot of work as a spouse and as a parent, that's fairly attractive.
Yes. I mean, I met a gentleman not too long ago on a Regent cruise, and he was sharing with me that his mother had become a widow. She was very active. And she sailed for 2 years because she wasn't quite ready to go into an assisted living program. And she planned her travels around people visiting her in different destinations. And it was the most remarkable 2 year time period, you know, sort of in that phase, you know, mid 70s, where she was still active. And I always remember that story. And I hope that more people look at that as a potential reality for their later years as well.
Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale, Arizona. The website, travelbta.com. Still to come, an update on gas prices in the energy sector.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There's been some relief at the gas pump, but will it last? Let's find out from Patrick DeHaan, senior petroleum analyst at gasbuddy.com based in Chicago. Of course, you can see people yelling at him on Twitter all the time at gasbuddy. Patrick, thanks for joining us today. You just have the information about the trajectory of gas prices, and people from all points of the political compass then use that information to fulfill your priors. But you have been sounding a fairly consistent tune lately, and that is gas prices have been falling for about a month, and it looks like they will continue to do so.
Well, I'm really hopeful that they will, of course, keeping in mind that OPEC disappointed markets this morning by announcing only a small increase. That hasn't held up the price of oil, which is plummeting $3 a barrel again this afternoon. We are nearing oil prices falling under $90 a barrel for WTI. Brent crude oil a little bit above that, still at 98. Wholesale prices for gasoline now, RBOB, down 13 cents a gallon. So at least for now, there appears to be more optimism and more likelihood that we'll fall under the average of $4 nationally in the next 7 to 12 days.
At the very least, it seems like we have gone back to the state of play before Russia invaded Ukraine. The price of oil, at least the WTI, is where it was in the middle of February. And the RBOB, the futures contracts for gasoline, kind of corresponds to prices that we saw in late January and early February. And the wholesale gas price for September delivery is below $3 a gallon for the first time in a long time. How does that translate into the price at the gas pump, especially in a big area like Chicago where there are a lot of motor fuel taxes piled on top of it?
Well, you know, there's certainly a lag, and futures and spot markets are highly different. Of course, futures markets are what most people see instead of the spot market. But anyway, not to get in the weeds, we are going to face a continued drop. Gas stations are continuing to get lower priced replenishments, and they will pass it along as soon as they sell through more expensive inventory. So there is a lag time. But the good news is we've actually seen two sub-$4 prices pop back up in Chicagoland, one in Addison, the other in Buffalo Grove. The average price, almost a dollar a gallon higher than that, Chicago's Metro, $4.93. But we should continue to see solid relief. Don't be in any hurry to fill your tank up unless you find one of those sub-$4 stations, because prices will likely continue coming down.
And then very quickly on the demand destruction front, it's down significantly from a year ago this year, and this is during the summer driving season. Does this mean people are adjusting their habits for high prices? And also, is this a function of more electric vehicles and more work-from-home days?
Well, really all of the above, especially when prices went up. People that have the option to work remote were likely doing so in increasing numbers. But as prices have come down, unsurprisingly, Americans are trying to make what they can out of the last really 3 weeks of summer. We have seen a little bit of an increase in demand, at least according to GasBuddy figures. Now, the EIA showing another drop today. But realistically, I think nobody disagrees. Demand has softened, but it's still above where we've been in 2020.
Patrick DeHaan, senior petroleum analyst with GasBuddy.com, based in Chicago. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.